Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone or something getting it right. And we're really excited to be joined today by Mr. Jack Hamilton, who's the author of Just Around Midnight, Rock and Roll, and the Racial Imagination. Jack, glad to have you with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Thanks for joining us, Jack.
I'm going to jump right to it. They call me the blurred around here, but I am also a music nerd as well. So I wear two very distinct hats on the show. And I read the book. I finished it on over the weekend. It's a great read. And I want to start off with how you decided to frame the conversation around these central characters, meaning, you know, Bob Dylan, Sam Cooke, the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Motown, Aretha Franklin, Dusty Springfield. They all sort of play the principal roles as you go through your narrative. Like, what made you decide to sort of use those to form your larger thesis?
Yeah, well, you know, it's like when writing a book about, you know, music in the 60s, which is like really there's so much to choose from. One of the things I have to do in like the sort of introduction of the book is kind of, you know, issue apologies for all the musicians I don't write about. But writing about 60s music, and particularly writing about sort of like the birth of 60s quote-unquote rock music, you know, there's just like certain people that kind of have to be in that story. You know, it's like you can't really write a book about rock music in the 60s and not write about the Stones and the Beatles and Dylan. You know, like, it's just like, it would be like that would be like writing a book about something different almost, or something. Some of the artists who I write about, you know, it's just like they're the big ones. You know, it's like totally honestly, like, I remember having a conversation with someone where I was like, maybe I just won't write about Bob Dylan. And they were like, no, you've got to.
It's like writing like a book about 90s hip hop without Jay-Z, Nas,
yeah,
and Biggie.
Exactly.
Like, no, it's kind of impossible.
It would be like you would be doing a disservice. There are certainly like big deal 60s artists that I don't write about. You know, like I don't write about the Doors. I don't write about the Grateful Dead, the Who. Like, I don't write about Sly and the Family Stone, Curtis Mayfield. There's plenty of people that I would have loved to include. But I guess, like, for me, like, what I was most interested in the book was, you know, thinking about, yeah, because it's really a book about music and race, and sort of like, you know, the way that race and musical genres kind of interact with each other, and the way that we often use race to think about music and use music to think about race. And this is a moment, a historical moment, where there's so much happening musically, and so much of it is happening kind of along these lines of people really sort of challenging preconceptions of like what kinds of people make what kinds of music. You know, you have and like what the sort of like expectations of what black music is supposed to be versus what white music is supposed to be. Like, all of that stuff is really thrown into kind of crisis in the 60s in a lot of respects. You know, you have like obviously something like, you know, like Motown Records' success, which is totally groundbreaking. You know, this idea that you could, you know, Berry Gordy has this idea that it's like, if I take black pop, you know, young black artists and market them carefully to white teenagers will buy that music. Versus like they will buy that music instead of buying basically like cheap white copies of it as they had sort of been doing in the 50s. And, you know, he was totally right. And that's obviously an absolutely revolutionary development in popular music historically. I mean, it's one of the most important developments, I would argue, ever. And similarly, you know, like the rise of groups like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, like coming from England, who are these groups who are like really steeped in black American popular music. You know, the Beatles really, really more with sort of pop, the Stones with sort of like older blues and R&B, but, you know, had this like kind of obsessive devotion to those forms of music and like a real kind of encyclopedic knowledge of those forms of music in a way that there never really been white American bands that had that going on in terms of rock bands. So that was that itself, like, you know, it's like a really, really interesting development. And so I was looking for artists that sort of manifested those kinds of things, you know, like people that sort of that do bring about this kind of crisis in the way that people think about, oh, like white people are supposed to play music like this, black people are supposed to play music like this. Like, this is a period where a lot of that.
Are you working on a Def Comedy Jam special?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Yeah.
That is really often sort of like that. The common theme and sort of the way that, you know, we talk about this stuff is sort of like we sort of take it for granted that there are these ways that it is. And this is a moment where like a lot of that was sort of thrown into it's just disrupted, whatever. So I was looking for people that were at the forefront of that. So I drifted towards musicians who I thought were doing that in like really interesting and provocative ways. Of course, you're always trying to find people that like maybe not that much has been written about yet. I mean, one of the other things is like there were certain people who I didn't write about just because like a lot of other people have written about them and have done a really good job of it. So, you know, like I didn't want to like sort of retread territory that's already been done really well.
You know,
it's like authenticity comes up a lot in the story. You know, what is real, for lack of a better word, and you talk about that a lot with the transition from folk music to then folk rock to then just rock and roll and rock music. Like, how much did that sort of intellectualism make all of this split between what was, you know, maybe a black musical form into now a white musical form?
It was really significant. I mean, like, definitely. I mean, like, one of the things is like, you know, like, I mean, yeah, one of the things with the sort of move from like sort of rock and roll to quote unquote rock music, you know, like this idea, which is this sort of like, that's like sort of like, I don't know, it sounds kind of pedantic to make that distinction, but it's a distinction a lot of people have made. And it's like, you know, the idea that like there's sort of like this genre called rock and roll in the early or the 50s and early part of the 60s. And then like it would shift to rock, which like emerges in sort of the mid to late 60s, which is, you know, more kind of artistically high minded. You know, it's like album oriented. It's also like very, very white. One of the things, I mean, and certain, some of the figures that like that sort of emerges around, I mean, the two biggest are Dylan himself and the Beatles too. It's like, you know, their music was written about in ways, it was like, you know, it was given like a sort of air of intellectual legitimacy, again, air of sort of artistic authenticity. Like the idea that this was like some pinnacle of personal expression. This notion, like the way that sort of like ideas of sort of genius clung around those artists, and like, you know, Dylan as the sort of poet, the auteur figure, and these are all things that like culturally speaking have been historically coded as white, you know. Like,
yeah, that's. I'm wondering if you could, just to jump in for a second. What's interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when I hear that kind of language and that shift, it sounds like that's sort of the language that's reserved for quote unquote high culture.
Yeah.
So totally. You start shifting it into, you know, we're not talking about pop music. We're, you know, this is Bach. This is like, right. This is, you know, classical culture. This is poetry. This is, and so when it might, and of course, you know, the Beatles and Dylan are great,
sure,
but that's not really the point. The point is that you're migrating, like, it's the same form as Sam Cooke, but you're migrating it rhetorically to something that I guess has been classically considered like quote unquote high European culture.
Totally, exactly. Yeah. So the Beatles, you know, it's like when the Beatles move into stuff like Sgt. Pepper and like they start garnering those sort of like they're getting compared to Stravinsky and they're getting compared to, Mozart and stuff like that. Similarly, Dylan, you know, by the mid to late 60s, Dylan's being compared to like Rambo and, you know, like and Keats and stuff. And you're like, well, these are things that are like those comparisons are a lot more available to white artists because of the fact that it's like, the Beatles get compared to Stravinsky in ways that, you know, Sam Cooke was not being compared to Stravinsky. And like, absolutely a huge part of that is that the Beatles, you know, like physically resembled that white male classical tradition, you know, like it was like, that was like, and that their whiteness like did, you know, allow for those comparisons to be made a lot more easily.
But they're actually pivoting out of, like, if we want to use that terminology, but like the high culture of like the quote unquote black rock and roll and blues tradition. Like, that's actually what they're growing from more right, so totally. Than Stravinsky.
Yeah. And that's so, the thing. It's okay. Like, this was like that move that they're making. It's like, you know, in the 60s, like there weren't a lot of people that sort of saw it was still being seen as like, the music of the 50s that had really inspired the Beatles and, you know, like was like absolutely what they were building on and were very open about that they were building on that, like still wasn't being taken that seriously. It was like there were a lot of people who sort of saw like, oh, the Beatles have suddenly made this music serious, you know, as opposed to like the Beatles themselves would say like, no, this music's already always been serious, you know, like it's like, I mean, the Beatles actually like almost literally said that many times.
One of the things, you also, authenticity is one piece of the puzzle. And then there's this conversation around soul that you spend a lot of time on. And I think it links to many of the points that you guys have been making, both you and Michael have been making, around soul was sort of this assumed natural physical attribute, for lack of a better word, that black artists just seem to embody. Whereas like, the white artists at the time had to work toward that, and there was sort of like a celebration of their craft and their diligence, I guess. I'm not using the words you used, but like, how do you distill that conversation around this idea of soul as a part of your identity versus a part of your effort?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, there's like one of the longest stereotypes of, you know, longest standing racial stereotypes in America, particularly, is that like, you know, black people are exceptionally good at music. You know, it's like the notion that like this is something that like going all the way back to slavery, you know, like it's like and far back into slavery. Was it like, you know, the stereotype that like, you know, black slaves were, you know, intellectually inferior, but were emotionally more attuned to things, you know, and it's like, and that they were preternaturally musically gifted. Like, this is all over, you know, sort of like racist literature from the 19th century.
Very musical, like, people.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. You know, and so it's like, so yeah, like, and there's a way that like, and you know, in a way it's like, yeah, like to some degree that's like, can become this sort of positive stereotype, you know, but it's like, it's still a stereotype, you know? So it's like this, basically in the 60s, what starts happening is like, yeah, there's these celebrations of sort of like a musical soul, you know, sort of like, I mean, Aretha Franklin's the person who it like maybe is most pronounced with, that it's like, oh, Aretha is so amazing. And it's like, she's basically treated like she's magical. And like, and it's like that magic is often tied back to her like specific, you know, her lineage in a sort of like specific imagining of the black experience, you know, that it's like, there's like literally things that are being written where it's like the reason Aretha sings so well is because she's like descended from slaves. And it's like that, you know, it's like the reason Aretha Franklin actually sings so well is because she's an incredibly talented singer and like, you know, like worked really hard at being a great singer. Like, it became this way of like, you know, under the guise of celebration, still basically just folding someone, seeing and hearing someone's musical ability totally in terms of their membership in a racial collective. So it's like, you know, this kind of like, but yeah, it's like the reason Aretha's great is because she's black. It's like, that's not the reason Aretha's great. Like, it's like, that's like, you know, that is like an attribute of Aretha, but it's like, it's not the, that doesn't explain why her music is great. And like, yeah, similarly, it's like, so this, and like the sort of backdoor aspect of this is that like, that's a way of actually sort of like discrediting the work that she puts into her craft. It's a way of like, yeah, it like, it negates craft, it negates technique, you know, it makes everything like this sort of, yeah, the product of this kind of magical attribute. And there's not a real, there's not an analogous thing for white artists. So it's like, so Dylan's talent and, you know, Paul McCartney's talent, whoever, like becomes like just explained in terms of like a personal genius, like but an individual genius.
Just to piggyback on that. So it would be like the equivalent if like there was a discourse that said Bob Dylan was this incredible writer and sort of eccentric charismatic musician, because like Jews are very sneaky and yeah. very sly, and he embodied that Jewish tradition of savvy as a musician and as a writer, and that's why he is what he is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think
that's and I'm not like, really totally joking. I mean, that's kind of the parallel, right?
No, it's like, yeah, it's like, I mean, it's obviously not like a totally perfect parallel, but I think that's like pretty close to a good parallel. You know, like it's like, yeah, and it's like, you know, people certainly have written like,
I mean, it's why I'm good at what I do. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's not to say that like, you know, that obviously it's not to say that Aretha's blackness like doesn't matter or isn't worth like discussing or like, you know, obviously like foregrounding, but it's like, it's using that as like an explanation for what makes her music great is actually, yeah, like that's not really giving credit where credit's due, like credit being due to Aretha Franklin herself, you know, like it's like, yeah, I mean, Aretha Franklin is like one of the most exceptional musicians to ever walk the face of the earth. Like, it's like, you know, there's just like, there's nothing about Aretha Franklin that is like representative of like a group of people. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, she is like, I mean, like, obviously there are ways that's true, but it's like, you know, in terms of her talent, I mean, she's just so exceptional. And it's like, you know, it's like, it's worth recognizing the exceptionalness of her talent rather than sort of being like, oh, she's great because she's black, which was sort of the, like some of the discourse in the 60s was more along those lines.
I want to jump to still kind of keeping in this magic vein and kind of turn it to a little bit of the supernatural as embodied by Jimi Hendrix. Like a lot of his ideas around his music have these cosmic elements, for lack of a better word. And he talks about race often in this sort of interstellar sort of supernatural perspective. And it makes me think about the impact of his music to artists today, because you talk about how we're still framing these conversations in a modern lens. So I think about D'Angelo or Blood Orange with Dev Hynes and TV on the Radio, people who are making, you know, what you wouldn't classically think of in this construct of black music, but it's sort of still tied back to that Jimi Hendrix supernaturalness, like Cody Chestnut terribly, you know, like, you know, he was awful, but how do we like,
how not do we, good.
Yeah. He was not
a mess.
Good.
I mean, look, it's true. Cody Chestnut, not good.
Cody Chestnut was all hype.
By the way, did you read the Jack Hamilton book? Tremendous.
Like, what do you think about those ideas of that cop getting into that realm of supernatural, and how I think modern artists that are sort of alternative, for lack of a better word, have kind of linked themselves very much to that idea.
Yeah, you know, I mean, well, Hendrix is such a, like, talk about an exceptional figure. Like, Hendrix was honestly, like, whenever I've been asked about this, like, it's like, Hendrix is, he was the most difficult person to write about in this book. Like, that chapter of the book that's about him was probably the one that gave me the most trouble. And the reason for that is that, like, Jimi Hendrix is like the person in this book who, it's like, I mean, there's a lot of people in this book who I think are like incredible musicians. It's like, Jimi Hendrix was a genius on the level of like, I think that there were, you know, there's like maybe three or four people at his level in like the entire 20th century. Like, he's just someone who was like, and I really believe that, having like been steeped in his music for the last several years. Like, it's like, there's just stuff about him that's like, it's inexplicable. You know, he was like someone who just was like hearing music in a way that no one had heard it before. And it's like, that becomes like really hard to write about very quickly, because you're like, you know, you can sort of like as a music writer, it's like you're always looking for like, okay, who are the influences? You know, what are the things that you can kind of compare this to? And not, and certainly Hendrix had a lot of influences, but there's elements to his music where you're just like, Jesus Christ, like, where is he getting this? You know, and it's like, and I think that, yeah, so I think the supernatural thing, like, for him was, like, I actually think he really bought into that stuff. Like, it's, like, I think he really, like, you know, but I also do think it gave him that sort of out, you know, like, it was, like, he really was someone who, like a lot of, like, really brilliant people, like, he was really, really, really averse to being categorized, like, in any way. He was someone, you know, who just, like, didn't want any, you know, anyone telling him what he could or couldn't do. He didn't want to like be placed in any sort of boxes, you know, and this has to do certainly with sort of like racial identity and sort of social identity, but also musical identity very much. You know, it's like, don't make me categorize myself. Don't make me categorize myself. You know, a lot of artists say that, but it's like, you know, with someone like Hendrix, I think he really meant it. And so like that sort of supernatural thing, the obsession, like the sort of cultivated weirdness, I think was in some ways a strategy. I think it was in some ways like it was earnest too. I think he genuinely was really interested in sort of like interstellar stuff. But like, yeah, but like thinking about people like, you know, some of the kind of great musical eccentrics, like certainly someone like D'Angelo. Yeah, I think, you know, Blood Orange, like certainly. Well, you know, like a huge one would be Prince. You know, like it's like Prince is someone who's like a very, very Hendrix-like figure in terms of his own kind of wanting to, you know, march to the beat of his own drummer and like just not follow anyone's rules but his own, and thinking about the way that Prince also used a lot of sort of like, you know, weird, you know, like not necessarily not extraterrestrial to the degree of Hendrix, but certainly kind of like, you know, sort of supernatural, kind of
spiritual,
spiritual. Yeah. You know, it's like, so I think of that very much as like, and that did a sort of similar thing for Prince, who's another person I would probably put in that category of just this sort of like insane, like, or I mean, just like unbelievable levels of musical genius.
You had a conversation with Tom Breen from Stereo Gum about rap music and could hip hop or rap be whitewashed as the in the term of the article in the same way that rock and roll was. And just wanted to get like a little bit of like a snapshot of basically your synopsis of why you don't think that could happen.
Yeah, now I'm trying to think of what I told Tom. I think there's like a number of reasons. Like, so for starters, like hip hop comes from like the sort of historical circumstances of hip hop are really different than like the birth of rock and roll. So one thing is like rock and roll, like it's like, it's not totally accurate to say that rock and roll music really starts out quote unquote black. Like rock and roll music really starts off interracial. Like as long as there's rock and roll music is a thing that people are talking about, as long as that phrase has been around, it was used to describe music that both black and white people were making. And like more specifically, music that like black and white people were listening to. Like, it's like, so this was something, so there was always this really interracial quality of rock and roll. Also, rock and roll, like, very importantly, like, starts off as a mass culture. Like, there's never a moment where rock and roll is subcultural. So rock and roll is always big. It's always, the term itself is used to describe something that is, like, massively popular from its very beginnings. So like hip hop, you know, starts in like, I mean, most people said it in 1973, and it's like, you know, Rapper's Delight doesn't come out till 79. Like it's like there's like a full 6 years where hip hop is existing and sort of like, you know, nurturing itself and like sort of like putting itself like, you know, kind of putting itself together and like making, yeah, it's like creating a community around itself. That's going on for 6 years before it even like emerges on record, before like most people in the world are ever aware that this thing even exists. So I think that those 6 years are like really important. And I think that for that reason, its roots in a subculture, its roots in like a very specific time and place. Like it's like, you know, everyone knows that hip hop was invented in the South Bronx in 73. Like it's like you're much harder pressed to find people to agree on when rock and roll was invented or who it was invented by. And so I think all that's important. I mean, just another thing too, that's like, and I still haven't really figured out like exactly the significance of this in terms of that specific question, like why hip hop is sort of different than rock and roll in terms of its the sort of racial character of it. But like it's like hip hop has like an incredibly important Caribbean influence. You know, that it's like Kool Herc and Flash and like a lot of the early pioneers of hip hop were coming from, you know, Caribbean backgrounds, and like the Jamaican sound system side of things was so important to the beginning of that music. And like that is not something, there's not an analogous sort of outside influence in rock and roll. Like rock and roll is like very, very American. And so I think that that plays a role into it too. But like the kind of biggest reason why I think that it's not going to happen is like it would have already happened. Like it's like I think that like it's like hip hop. If hip hop was going to become white, like the way that rock and roll did, like that would have happened already. Like one of the things my book is really, you know, I think is like showing is that like that switch, it's really by like 67, 68 that's really started to happen. And like rock and roll music, depending on when you date it from starting, is like really like maybe 15 years old at that point. Like hip hop at this point has been around for like over 40 years. So it's like, so I think that if that were going to happen, that sort of like hip hop would become white in the same way that rock and roll became white, like that would have happened already.
My kind of final question we have as we move towards wrapping up, I mean, and it's related to the hip hop question. I just want to say, first of all, parenthetically, I want to apologize to our producer, super producer Matt, because he has a burgeoning, aspiring career as a stylist and as a rapper. And I'm sorry, it's not going to become white, Matt. So I do want to apologize to him for that. I know that's a tough pill you just gave him. But the question that I have is what's interesting about now, I mean, and you talked about sort of rock and roll out of the gate as sort of being a very kind of it wasn't like something that was just appropriated from black to white. It was something that was relatively fluid interracially and then was appropriated as white. And hip hop is sort of distinctly, African-American. In today's world, it seems like we're in another place where certainly at least in pop culture and pop music, at least what's sort of trendy, and I think in a good way, is for people to want to do as many mashups as possible. You want to reach for as many influences, you know, as possible. I mean, I remember several years ago it was really important, you know, like Snoop Dogg and Jay-Z were trying to collaborate with Punjabi rappers and appear in Bollywood movies. Jay with Linkin Park on the opposite end. So I guess my question is, in an environment where the aspiration is the fusion and the integration, but these issues are still really important and really prevalent, but they might be harder to detect.
Yeah.
How do we have the conversation about appropriation, authenticity, what kind of meaning we ascribe in the mashup culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like it's I think in some ways just such a difficult question to really answer satisfactorily. Like
I always try to set guests up to not be able to answer questions satisfactorily before we sign off. It's just kind of a dick move I do. I'm sorry.
No, I mean I think it's a really important question, you know, obviously, because it's like, because I actually frankly, like it's like, I think like stuff like, you know, expanding beyond your immediate horizons and like, you know, getting into contact with people that aren't like you and, you know, getting into hearing sounds that aren't like you and absorbing them, or, you know, that aren't coming from where you're coming from. Like, that's so important. Like,
it makes
life
better.
Music is going to suck if people don't do that. You know, right. It's like, I mean, God, like, it's like whenever I hear music that sounds like it's just people, you know, who just like never really left their specific surroundings, it's like the least interesting thing in the world. For that reason, you know, it's like, I sometimes think that like, you know, I think that like cultural appropriation conversations, I think they're like really important, but I think we're often like not that careful or reflective about the way that we have them, you know, because it's sort of like a lot of times when people are mad about cultural appropriation, like it's like they're actually mad about other things, you know, that are like this. Those are the things that we should be talking about. So it's like economic injustice, you know, it's like is the problem that someone is appropriating it, or is the problem that someone is appropriating, creating it, and getting in, you know, disproportionately
stealing it
off it? It's like, you know, stealing it is like a different question too. Like it's like, is this like something that it's like someone is, it seems to be deliberately obscuring the source of this, you know, that it's like they're claiming that they came up with it and like, or you know, implying that and like you're not giving credit to the people that originated it, you know? So it's like, I think really it's just a matter of like Yeah, it's a matter of being like incredibly respectful to the people and the cultures and the, you know, the people that were there before you, that were, you know, that sort of the originators of things. And yeah, like it's like being really mindful about the histories and the very the specific contexts that go into the music that's inspiring people. I mean, that is actually something that it's like, you know, I think that like in the '60s, like it's like there were artists who were pretty good at that. Like it's like, you know, like someone like the Beatles and the Stones were like really good at crediting their influences when they were like giving interviews and stuff like that, and like trying to put some of those artists, you know, give that spotlight back to people. Like it's like certainly like it's like the Stones are incredibly problematic in a lot of ways, but like that that is something that they definitely did. And it's like, you know, and I think that like just being aware of your own position, like basically it's like don't be an asshole about it. I think it's sort of like the most fundamental thing. And it's like unfortunately like people have historically had a huge difficulty like with not being assholes. It's like, and so that's what I think we have to be better.
That is the main takeaway. I think people historically have a problem with not being assholes, and that's like, brilliant.
I do think that like, you know, but I do think that we need a way to talk about it that isn't making people afraid or like further insular, you know, that sort of notion. Cause that is something that I saw in this era and doing this, like this sort of notion, because it's like, if those kind of conversations become too heated and too restricted, like you are going to end up with this situation where it's going to be like certain types of people are authorized to make certain types of music and certain types. Once people violate that, then people are going to, you know, and that's stupid.
And then that, yeah, that shrinks culture and
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack Hamilton, the author, is just, the book is called Just Around Midnight, Rock and Roll and the Racial Imagination. Thank you so much for joining Two Dope Boys on Point.
Yeah, man, this is great.
I love this. This is awesome.